And the thing is, after all these years, I still look back with wonder.
Hello, Wonderlings, and welcome to another episode of Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast. I'm your host, Angela Bowen, and today we are discussing Season 2, Episode 1, Heart of Darkness, which aired on November 30th, 1988. Now, I hope you guys all had a wonderful holiday weekend, and for you international listeners, I hope you all had an awesome weekend as well. Less than a month till summer. Yay! Well, maybe not yay. I mean, maybe yay for the kids on going on summer break in another week, am I right? Not so much for us adults. We don't get those anymore. All right. Well, my husband and I had a really good weekend. We grilled steak on Saturday. We had chicken fried steak on Sunday and grilled bacon and cheese stuffed burgers on Monday. I put French and... Gosh, I cannot talk already and I barely begun. I put French's caramelized French fried onions between the two burger patties on my hamburger bun, and then that way they kind of soften up a little bit, and then I put Heinz 57 steak sauce on them, which was very, very good. All right, well, I believe some congratulations are in order. We have a winner of the episode trivia question for Season 2, Episode 1, Heart of Darkness, which was posted on the Facebook Wonder Years podcast page and also on the Instagram Wonder Years podcast page. I posted the question, who plays bad boy Gary who befriends Kevin and Paul in the Season 2 premiere? Well, Carlos Marin answered correctly with Breckenmeyer playing bad boy Gary. Congratulations, Carlos. I'm making you an honorary Wonderling of the Week, and you're getting a special post on both the Facebook Wonder Years fan page as well as on Instagram. It's your day. Have a great Friday, and thanks for playing the Wonder Years episode trivia game. More to come every week. I always do one trivia question and one listener question. So you have plenty of chances to be able to play along and win. I do want to let you know, once again, I will be only picking my favorite episodes of Season 2, which there are a lot. I mean, through Seasons 2 through 4, there's a bit of episodes. There's not too many that I don't like, but through 5 and 6, it's going to get really dicey, like I've said before, so... At the end of each season, I will do a poll for you to vote on an episode that I didn't cover, and the one with the most votes is the one that I will review before going on to the next season. Also, at the end of each season, I will do a season wrap-up compiled of my and your favorite moments of the season, favorite songs, best guest star of the season, and many more things. Also, I am starting a new podcast. I know 3 podcasts might be too much, but right now I'm on a hot streak, or at least I feel like I am, with my ideas and have no plans to slow down anytime soon. And that new podcast is called, dun dun dun, Tea Time with Mr. Belvedere, a Mr. Belvedere podcast that will be debuting later this month, or probably even as soon as sometime next week. I seem to be stuck on 80s sitcoms, but you know what? These are the kind of shows that I love. I grew up on those shows. Also, don't forget my Punky Power, an unofficial Punky Brewster podcast. That is a clean lyrics podcast, but I'm still my goofy self on it. But it still can be enjoyed by family and friends alike. Well, I'm ready to jump into this first episode of Season 2. How about you guys? Let's get started with the episode synopsis. Kevin and Paul take a walk on the wild side when they meet bad boy Gary in gulp detention. The two boys lie to their parents to camp in the woods, but get more than they bargained for when they learn that Gary is no angel. He is in fact a wolf in sheep's clothing and supplying them with beers and cigarettes. Could Gary just be a lonely and misunderstood troubled youth, or is he truly a rebel without a cause? I'll let you guys decide for yourselves. This episode begins in what looks like a dream as Kevin is making his way through a cave while the song Riders on the Storm by The Doors plays. Adult Kevin narrates how as seventh grade wore on, he began to have nightmares that took place in a cave, and sometimes Paul and Winnie appeared with him, and sometimes not. Then, at the end of the dream, there'd always be a flash of light, and he'd find himself in second period math class, sometimes wearing red footy pajamas, right before he wakes up in a panic due to the stress of seventh grade. Wow, I didn't think that junior high could cause one so much stress. I mean, I clearly hated junior high. I did not like it. But, you know, I had my own reasons. I wasn't popular. That's not really a real reason, I guess. But, I didn't have a good time at school. I was happy to just graduate and get the heck out. Now we arrive at school and we see kids walking into school, and there's a close-up shot of a couple with their hands in each other's back pockets. Is that what couples in the 60s did to show that they were taken? Inside the school, Kevin and Paul are hanging out by the lockers 15 minutes before class starts, deciding whether to walk around or just to continue hanging out by the lockers. Usually in junior high, right before class, I might just hang around the door of the class. Yeah, I usually just hung around the door of the class. I didn't hang around my locker. In the eighth grade, a friend of mine, she and I would kind of always hang around one of the corners of the sixth grade hallway while waiting for class to start. So, staring at all the cute boys. These poor boys just trying to not look pathetic because they don't have a crew to hang with. It's just the two of them. Lucky for them, Winnie comes up and Paul is just so excited to see a familiar face. Like, look who it is! It's Winnie! She hasn't forgotten about us. Not that she's dating and about us. Not now that she's dating an eighth grader. But all Winnie's cheerfulness will not sway Kevin, who offers a brisk and blunt hi, not meeting her eyes. Winnie notices this brush off and plays it off, asking the boys how their weekend was. Kevin, continuing with the cold shoulder, says, "It was fine." Winnie offers an olive branch by suggesting they walk around together, and Kevin fires back, "What about Kirk? Wouldn't you rather walk around with him?" Kevin, you are seriously being a grade A fucking cunt. I'm sorry if that's a derogatory term to only be used for degrading women, but he really is. That was uncalled for, him lashing out at her. I know that he's upset now that she's with somebody else, but he seriously needs to just get off of that and move forward in his life. Winnie asks in a small voice, "We're still friends, aren't we?" But before she can get an answer, a girl calls Winnie over to her circle of friends, telling her, Winnie, come over here. Kirk wants to ask you something. Oh my gosh. Have I not heard stuff like that in junior high? We're like, oh my gosh, so-and-so thinks you're cute. I hated that. I hated it. It's just annoying. Kevin tells her she better hurry, don't want the girl to pop a vein in her head or something. And Winnie agrees, excusing herself and walking over. Kevin looks on, seeing how Winnie is now becoming one of the cool kids as Kirk puts his arm around her. Excuse me. As the scene changes to the classroom setting, we hear a voice whispering, "Hey, what'd you get for number one?" That voice belonging to a boy named Gary Kosei, played by one Brickenmeyer, all shaggy blonde hair and looks to be in the throes of onset puberty, wearing a green army surplus jacket, looking all badass. He did look badass. He's trying to cheat off Paul's test paper during math class, and Paul keeps telling him, like, get out of here, mind your own business. So he switches to Kevin for answers, asking him what he got for number one. But this apparently isn't good enough for Gary, who just takes Kevin's paper and starts copying down all of his answers. Paul tells Kevin he's crazy, that he's going to get caught, and Kevin tells Paul to relax. And Paul says, Miss Ritvo's gonna nail you, saying she's not as stupid as she looks. She just happens to be standing right next to him when he says that, and then, of course, all three boys wind up in detention. Why in the hell would you think that that is a good idea? Like, oh, here, let me just take your whole paper, write down your answers onto my sheet. He may as well have just erased Kevin's name and wrote his in it and handed that in. I mean, come on, guys. Now, when I took my college math class, I had notes that helped me break down the problem, even though I still failed the class because I suck at math. I'm not that great. I really sucked at math, even with notes. Those boys should have taken a lesson in cheating from the opening scene movie in The Liars Club that came out in 1993. The high schoolers in this movie came up with great hiding places for their answers when cheating on their final exams. Like, one girl had a little American flag patch sewn to her one leg of her jeans that when you lifted it up, it had the answers kind of written on the back of it. One guy put his answers on the inside of his sunglasses. Yeah, that's not obvious. One girl wrote her answers on her upper thigh. She was wearing, like, a little sundress. One guy had answers on a piece of paper taped to the inside of his belt buckle and also stupidly wrote some answers on his hand only to sweat them off while he was taking the test. What a... In detention, Kevin looks around the room at the other kids. One boy is reading Mad Magazine and he looks seriously freaking stoned out of his mind. One kid, obviously a greaser with slicked back hair, a black leather jacket, wrist cuff, etc., pulls out a switchblade. What the fuck? No way in hell would that be allowed in school. That kid would be expelled, as well as the police would be called if that happened today. Adult Kevin narrates that he and Paul were out of their element among some of these possible repeat offenders, saying how he felt like Dennis the Menace on a chain gang with Lee Harvey Oswald and the Boston Strangler, as we see another kid with black sunglasses. Damn, that room is packed with kids, even girls. Paul says how his mom is going to kill him, and Gary tells him just relax and just forges Paul's mother's signature onto the detention slip and asks Paul, well, he does it for his own, and then he says, hey, what's your mom's name? And then Paul, you know, he's like, I'm not telling you that. But then Kevin says, you know, her name is Ida. Gary writes it down, and Kevin hands his slip over to Gary, and Gary forges Norma's signature. So what, they hand them in as they leave detention? Come on, you're telling me the teacher didn't care enough to notice? He just handed them the slips at the beginning of detention and now they magically have their parents' signatures on them? Oh, here, by the way, here's my... you gotta take them home! I'm surprised you... No, you take these home. These are fake. Toss them in your face. Yeah. Kevin walks in and Norma asks where he's been, and Kevin says he was with Paul. Well, he technically wasn't lying. He just told a little white lie, like, yes, he was with Paul. He just didn't say where. Good thing, you know, she didn't question, like, no, I called over to Paul's. You weren't there, and neither was he. Now we're back in the cave again in Kevin's dream. He's walking, seeing nothing but darkness. Then suddenly, he's falling with nothing to grab onto. All of a sudden, he finds himself in class again, but this time, he's perched on the teacher's desk, and he's in his underwear. Embarrassed, he grabs a book to place over himself. I mean, he is in his tighty-whities. Nothing else. Oh, my goodness. Everybody has at least had that dream. I've had that dream where I've shown up to my job in either underwear or just a shirt, and very embarrassing. You feel vulnerable. You feel all those things. Then he wakes up. What do all these dreams mean? I have weird dreams too, and sometimes they feel so vivid and real, I can still recall them throughout the day. Like, my mind is still there, and they haven't completely left me. Some dreams I actually will even recall from months, years ago, when something in my mind, like, kind of sets that off, like a deja vu moment. Which I kind of think deja vu moments sometimes are bits of dreams you had prior that you don't realize until they're bits of the future that you dream about, but you don't really know until you actually live that moment. Like this one time I had this dream, it was before I even met Jeremy. And I had this dream that I was in this little kitchen and I was standing next to somebody fixing a sandwich or something. And I felt very comfortable. I felt very safe in this person's presence. The only thing is, I couldn't see that person's face. And then, you know, one day I'm just standing there next to Jeremy making a sandwich and everything. And all of a sudden it's like, boom, out of nowhere, that hits me like, I've been in this situation before. Why does it feel like this exact situation? It's so familiar. Why? So I that's what I think. That's my own interpretation on, you know, dreams sometimes and deja vu. So let's move on here. We hear a locker door slam, and we're back in the school hallway again. Paul brings up to Kevin that it's got to be the contacts that Winnie's wearing that is making her so popular. He's like, she thinks she's so cool, and that she's turned into a real snob. What, because she's wearing contact lenses? Then he's, you know, saying, like, I'm happy that I'm allergic to contacts. Well, you know what? Spoiler alert, he must not be, because later on, it turns out he's wearing contacts in, like, season, like, 4 or 5. You know, I don't see it that way at all, Winnie being a snob, because, what, she's got contact lenses. You know, I just see her, she's a nice girl, the kids are drawn to her sweet life force. You know, I love Winnie's pink shirt in the scene, it's really... It's got, like, it's, like, a light pink, but then it's got, like, reddish, pinkish, fuchsia, magenta, whatever, like, long rectangle, square-type things on the front, a pattern on the front. It was really cool. But what I love Kirk McRae's Argyle sweater vest more. I love, he looked so prim and proper. And really, really cute. he's my favorite. I like him. Paul continues to berate Winnie's choice of eyewear, saying how he's happy he's allergic to contacts if it means turning into a snob. Oh, Paul. How easy and how soon you switch sides. Kevin tells Paul to put a sock in it, and we see Gary coming out of a smoke-filled bathroom and blowing cigarette smoke out of his nose and mouth. So he clearly smokes on a regular basis, because that's a regular cigarette smoke move with the out the nose and everything. I mean, anybody can blow smoke out of their mouth, but to blow it out of their nose, yeah, that's a regular smoker there. He heads over to Kevin, asking for a favor if he can store a brown paper sack in Kevin's locker till after lunch. And Paul keeps mouthing to Kevin, no, no, no. And Kevin just says, sure, why not, right? Good thing they didn't do locker searches back then, or did they? Probably not. I'm sure they weren't nearly as common as if they, you know, like they happen today. You know, I don't think I hardly used my locker much in my 4 years of high school. In 1997, until the Columbine shooting in April of 1999, we could actually have our bags in class, along with our coats. Which was nice, because I got cold easily in class. I remember in 7th grade, I put a centerfold, or maybe a pinup, in my locker of Devon Sawa. In my freshman year of high school, my grandma took me during August to the high school so I could kind of find out where my locker is and where my classes were, which were pretty much, like a mile away from where my locker was located, which is probably why I didn't use it hardly at all. And I put a pinup of Hanson in my locker, and then I did manage to get lost on my first day of school. Paul asks Gary what's in the bag, and Gary just tells Paul, "You're paranoid, man. Why are you so paranoid?" He tells him it's just stuff for Friday night, and Kevin asks, "Well, what's happening Friday? What's Friday night?" And Gary tells him he likes to crash out in the woods sometimes. You know, when his mom, or old lady as he calls her, she's always hassling him. Kevin says, yeah, his old lady's the same way. And Paul mouths, old lady? Yeah, Kevin, don't compare your sweet mom to whatever train wreck Gary's mom probably is. I don't know what his home life is like at all, but I'd say it's probably not as good as Kevin's. I wonder if there's maybe abuse. Why would Gary feel the need to hide out in the woods all the night, all the time? Reminds me of Johnny, played by Ralph Macchio from The Outsiders, kind of a situation. He didn't want to go home either, which, I mean, was obvious because his parents, like, beat on his ass all the time, which was fucking terrible. So, I'm curious. I would like to know, what is Gary's backstory? I mean, spoiler alert, after this episode, he disappears like a fart in the wind. So, what happens to him later on? I'm gonna do something kind of cool on Facebook, Instagram, whatnot, where whenever there is a guest star or something who I think is pretty cool, I thought it'd be interesting, and if you guys want to put predictions on there of what you think happens to this character later on down the road, even though we never see him again, I think that'd be fun. I really would love to hear what you guys would think would become of Garrett. I apologize for all the possible light burping, indigestion. I just had Arby's. I had their pork belly sandwich. I probably had it 6 times now in the last month. And I also tried their new pizza slider, which I have to say, I really like that one. Alright, Gary tells them it's cool if they want to hang out with him, but Paul knows his mother would never agree to it, and Kevin suggests he say that he's just staying at Kevin's, shaking Paul's shoulder, like telling him, don't be so paranoid, man. Is that a thing in the 60s? Do they all say, don't be so paranoid, man? Like, ugh. It's all about the paranoia. All about the paranoia. You better hope she doesn't call your house then, Kevin. Your alibi is not sounding so tight here. I'll be the first to admit, some of my friends I had growing up were not the greatest influences on me, but honestly, I didn't have too many options. It was either them or the invisible kind, and you can only do so much with that. They each slap hands, and Gary slaps Paul's cheek, telling him to keep the change. So slick, kid, as he walks away. The scene changes, and we're in another frickin' dream sequence. You know, this is getting old. Cripes, how many of these do we clearly need? We don't. Come on. I mean, this is the third one. I think they just must have had to stretch this episode out, because to be honest, there isn't much to it. Not the best season opener, in my opinion. This time, in the cave, he's carrying Winnie, whose leg is possibly broken, and then he's in class telling everyone, Winnie, she needs help. I think her leg is broken. And the class bursts out laughing, and Kevin looks down, sees he's holding a 4-foot purple and white rabbit. He wakes up from the dream sweating and breathing heavy, just like all the other times before that he's woken up and started breathing heavy. And sometimes when I have a really bad dream and I wake up, it's like I'm still in that dream and I'm still so shocked that I can barely move. Yeah. Do you guys ever have any dreams like that? Alright. In the kitchen on Friday, Norma's asking who this Gary character is, and Kevin tells her it's a kid from school. Turns to Paul to agree with him. Paul is wearing this forest green with red racing stripes across the top, windbreaker jacket and pants. Norma asks how they know him, and Kevin says from school. They have the same math class, and that they got the same grade on a math quiz when Norma asks if Gary is a good student. Norma suggests she call his mother just to be sure, but Kevin tells her they're just going to be right behind the house, and Gary's mom will be there the whole time. Bullshit. He hands her the paper with Gary's number on it, and he mutters how, call him if you want. I mean, what does it matter if you don't trust me? Norma looks at him like she's kind of trying to suss out the truth. Like, she's like, do I really believe my son? Way to guilt her, Kevin. She's like, of course I trust you. The boys are in the woods, and Gary comes rolling in late because he had to pick up some stuff. Kevin says they brought stuff, too. Pulls out a bag of marshmallows, Kool-Aid, and possibly Twinkies. They have so many variations of Twinkies nowadays, it is unreal. I mean, I love a good Twinkie, don't get me wrong, but I can't have that crap all the time. I hope that Kool-Aid is already made up in like a mason jug or something. Gary pulls out his own stuff out of his bag. Two cartons of cigarettes and a couple of 16-ounce beers. Actually, to be honest, I think it was only one beer because most of the time it's just being passed between, you know, Kevin and Paul. Paul also mentions he brought a snake bite kit just to be on the safe side, and Gary tells him, looks like it's going to be up to him to lighten them up a little bit. And he cranks up his 8-track player, which blasts the song, Sunshine of Your Love. Gary starts by pulling out the carton of cigarettes and lights one up. Kevin at first looks back in shock, but then gets over that fast because he, in turn, asks for one himself. Now it's Paul's turn to look shocked as he stares at Kevin in surprise. Kevin looks at Paul and says, it relaxes me. Gary offers one to Paul, but he immediately turns it down, saying, no thanks, I don't smoke. Gary then pulls out a 16-ounce can of beer, telling Paul, well, good, then you can start on the brew, unless you'd rather have Kool-Aid. Now it's Kevin's turn to look at Paul, mentally urging him to just say no, all the while lit with a lit cigarette in his hand. Damn, maybe these kids could have used the D.A.R.E. program back then. But then again, they probably would just laugh it off, like most of the kids that I took the class with probably did. If kids want to smoke or drink, they're gonna find a way. Which, for a parent, being a parent, as for a parent, has got to suck. Because just to be sure they know, you know, just be sure the kids know the dangers and long-term effects of using, you know, smoking cigarettes at a young age or drinking, you know, the dangers of that and everything. You know, we even had a D.A.R.E. concert. Yeah. But Paul gives in and chugs that beer like a boss. Although, in this scene, it's obvious that the can was empty because that can should kind of appear heavy in his small hands. I mean, that thing would have some weight to it. Good grief, Paul, you'd think he was going to down the whole thing in one gulp. But he hands it to Kevin, who just takes a sip from it. Which is how you should do it if you were trying beer for the first time. As a preteen, in my opinion, if you were. I'm no stranger to beer. As an adult, I don't drink. I tried it growing up, and I thought it was gross. It tasted like piss. As for cigarettes, I started when I was 17. A person at a gas station must have thought I looked old enough because she didn't card me. This was back in the late 90s. I smoked a little bit off and on with a couple of friends, but luckily never got hooked on them. Maybe because I never fully inhaled. I don't know. Gary tells him he loves to party. He could party 24 hours a day. Good for you, Gary. I bet your life is one big fucking raging party that never ends. Kevin agrees the same for himself. Gary asks if he's heard of the band Purple Andy that go to Central, and Kevin tells him, yeah, really? You've heard of them, huh? I've never fucking heard of them in my life. Gary says he usually parties with them, and he also has a girlfriend who goes to Central, too, who's got a big rack. Or as he refers to them, honkers. Out to here. While those are obvious lies, one, if he parties with the so-called Purple Andy, then why is he hanging with the likes of Kevin and Paul? And two, the classic having a girlfriend but she goes to a different school scenario. He may as well have said she lives in Canada for all that hot air that came out of that story. Paul, impressed with that, offers Kevin some more of the beer, but he passes and then he just tosses back the rest. Gary asks if they're currently with anyone, and Kevin says he used to go with Winnie Cooper, but they're broken up. Bullshit, Kevin. You guys, you never dated. You shared one kiss. That does not constitute a relationship. Gary admits Winnie Cooper. Yeah, she's pretty cute. A little flat. And then Paul adds how Kevin likes girls who are flat. Then he asks Gary for a cigarette, and Gary asks, thought you didn't smoke. Only when I drink, Paul tells them. Okay, Paul is really starting to loosen up here. Kevin tells Paul, Carly Healy's no Raquel Welch. And Paul interjects by saying she's got a handful, and Kevin says, like you'd ever know. Gary tells the boys how you can't go out with one girl too long or they get clingy, wanting you to walk them to class every day. Kevin gets more comfortable with the beer, and he and Paul begin casually passing it back and forth between them. Seems like the beer has loosened their tongues a little bit. All of a sudden, Paul starts giggling hysterically. Kevin and Gary both look at Paul like he's lost his mind. What was even in those cigarettes? Were they even cigarettes? I mean, sure, I saw the cartons and the name emblazoned on the side, but wow. I guess Paul is just a lightweight. I wonder if he'll have a hangover in the morning. He chugged most of that beer, and Kevin's just been taking sips off the top. Paul suggests they do something, but doesn't know what. Then Gary comes up with the idea of checking out a nearby cave. Kevin's ears perk up at this, just like his dream. Turns out this so-called cave is actually a sewer that's gross as hell, but the boys continue into it with flashlights. Paul asks Kevin if he knows what this is called, what they're doing, and Paul tells him, spelunking. I had no idea what the hell that was, so I looked it up, and it's actually the exploration of caves. Gary shows him the drain in the wall that he says leads right up to the rec center behind Sears. Now, I remember this one time when I was in my late teens, I was over at my friend Jerry's house, and it was summertime. You know, we were just looking for something to do, and, I also had my license, he had his. And finally, he says, I know what we can do. And me, him, and his cousin go to the woods in a nearby town equipped with flashlights. On the drive over, Jerry tells me of these three high school guys from Ionia who skipped school one winter day and parked their car in the woods and smoked cigarettes and something about them choking to death in carbon monoxide fumes or something. So the three of us walked in the dark woods with flashlights and Jerry pulls a Gary, but here he does it so convincingly. That was just the way Jerry is. He had a way of making, just saying something in the right way that you would believe it. Jerry just kind of whispers, kind of Blair Witch style, like, did you hear that? I heard a voice. All of a sudden, he turns tail and runs out of the woods, not waiting for me or his cousin. Now, mind you, it's dark, and all we have is flashlights. I start to follow, but my clumsy self trips and drops the flashlight. We got back to the car and drove off. Creeped me the hell out. There was this other time when I was 19, and this was close, you know, where we went. This was close to where I lived. Jerry and me, his brother and two cousins, they picked me up. We drove to White's Bridge, which sadly burned down like over 5 years ago or so due to an arsonist. My mom and other people had carved their names into the beams and walls of this bridge. It was basically an enclosed wooden bridge. But anyway, we drove over to it, and there's a rumor that someone haunts the bridge. Someone who supposedly committed suicide. I don't fully know for sure, but the rumor is, or was, if you put your car in neutral in the middle of the bridge, the ghost will pull it along. For all I know, this could be total crap. But the car rolled forward. I freaked out and tried to jump out of the car. It was an enclosed bridge, by the way. And Jerry quickly grabbed my arm, asked me, What? What are you doing? Where do you think you're going? Creepy stuff, to me, anyway. Alright, then Gary leads into this ghost story about some guy who got trapped inside and starved to death, and then he drowned when it rained and flooded the sewer. Kevin calls bullshit, Kevin starts to get freaked out and calls bullshit on Gary's story. Says how you can either drown or starve to death, but you can't do both. Gary backs it up by saying he heard it from a friend of mine's cousin? What? Nah. I heard it from a friend of mine's cousin. Really, I'm sure you did. And who the hell did he hear it from? Gary continues the story by saying how they only found parts of the guy and the rats ate the rest. The camera pans to Paul's face, and he is clearly freaked out. Let me just say that if I were in the sewer, and that's a big if, and I only had a flashlight and someone told me that, I might be gullible enough to believe it, or I might get argumentative like Kevin, or I might just turn tail and get the fuck out of there. Let's get out of here, Paul tells him. Wow, he's sobered up fast. I guess fear will do that to you. Gary challenges Paul, telling him it was his idea to go in the first place. Paul says, well, that's before I knew there were body parts inside here. All of a sudden, Gary tells them he heard something and tells them to listen, and then we hear this low, I'm dying. And then Paul and Kevin are scared at first, but Kevin catches on quick that it's just Gary fucking with them and tells him to shut the hell up, especially when Paul turns tail and runs, but not before twisting his ankle and falling. Gary jokes how he can't believe they actually fell for that and teases Paul, asking him if he's actually crying. This kid is a real dickwad, let me tell you. I can't see him amounting to shit later in life. How awkward if they have to continue to see him in class. I'm sure they'll probably just act like he doesn't exist. Kevin helps Paul up, and together they leave Gary in the cave by himself while they head for home. Kevin and Paul are walking down the street as Kevin reaches for the key behind the light. The lights in the living room flick on. How did his parents know that they were out there? Norma and Jack open the door, surprised to see Kevin and Paul back so soon, asking if something happened and are they okay. Kevin assures her they're fine, that they just felt like coming home. Norma notices Paul's limp as they come inside. Surprisingly, Kevin doesn't have a single nightmare that night. The next day, he and Paul are hanging out by the curb, playing a card game. I couldn't tell which one at first. I thought it was maybe Uno, because they were mentioning, like, colors and stuff. But then they start talking about players. So, were they talking about the color of the players' uniforms? Like, football, baseball? Well, baseball's all... Well, they're all one... But football's all one color, too. I don't know. Anyway, Winnie comes over and she's wearing her cat's eye glasses from the pilot episode. They say a quick hey and look back down at their cards, and Winnie asks them if they're mad at her. Aww, that's so sad she even has to ask that. They both look up at her and Kevin asks what she means. She tells them in the hallway at school he just looked mad at her, and Kevin looks back down saying, I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, you know, Kevin. You know. She looks to Paul, who just looked at her, feigns innocence as well, saying he doesn't know either. She just stares at them, telling them to forget it, and turns to walk away. Paul asks Winnie why she's wearing her glasses, and she says she lost one of her contact lenses, saying how she looks so stupid in her glasses. Kevin tells her she looks good, and she says, yeah, sure. He adds how she looks smarter and how just the other day he and Paul were saying how dumb she looked in contact lenses, and Paul agrees. Kevin mentions how he's surprised the teachers haven't started making her marking her down because she looked dumb in her contacts. He's just trying to make her feel better, and it's working because she's like, oh yeah, tell me about it. She jokes back, but you can tell she's smiling, so she's starting to turn around. She jokes back saying, oh, you're one to talk. Kevin puts his hands up in surrender and says, I would not lie about this. And then he turns to Paul and asks, Paul, would I lie about this? Paul chimes in and says, I've known him for 12 years, and he would definitely not lie about this. He definitely looked dumb in contacts. You guys, she says, Kevin tells her, who's going to tell you these things if not your friends? Aw, these kids, guys, these kids are awesome together. I love this little trio here, Kevin, Paul, and Winnie. They're all in a circle, they're laughing, and Kevin tries a couple times to grab Winnie's glasses, but she backs away, and then Paul takes his off, and Kevin tries on them, imitating Paul, and then gives him his glasses back. I notice on the Netflix version of the episode, the music plays over the end scene is changed. It's supposed to be Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles, which I was looking at the subtitles, and that's what's coming up on the screen, but it's another song that's playing overhead. So I'm guessing they just didn't get the rights to play that song. All right, well, that's the end of the episode. I'm giving this one my Flower Power episode rating. I'm giving this one was a low one for me. It really was. I am going to give this one 2 out of 5 Flower Power petals. One for Kevin finally coming to his senses and seeing Gary for the jerk he really is in the sewer and coming to Paul's aid when Paul hurts his leg. And 2, I'm for Kevin coming around at the end of the episode, letting Winnie know they're still friends after he gave her the cold shoulder at school. I had to knock off 3 petals because, honestly, not much happened in this episode until, like, the very, very end. Well, that's, you know, my opinion. Everyone has their own. 1, that we had to see 3 different Kevin nightmare sequences to stretch things out. 2, Kevin being an overall dick to Winnie just because she's moved on with another boy. 3, Gary teasing Paul after he twisted his ankle. Alright, my quote of the episode. When I look back on it now, I feel sorry for Gary. When all was said and done, he was just a little kid, and I guess he needed friends. But all Paul and I knew that night was that we wanted to go home. All right, for the Far Out Threads Award, it goes to my guy, Dreamy Kirk McCrae, in his Argyle sweater vest. Oh, so cute. All right, who was the worst award? This episode, of course, it's going to go to Gary, the lying, smoking, drinking bad boy who decided to be cruel and telling a crappy ghost story that freaks the boys out and causing Paul to twist his ankle. Then Gary proceeds to laugh in their faces, basically calling them a couple of pussies. Gary, why don't you just transfer to Central so you can hang out with this so-called big-boobed girlfriend you claim to have and party 24/7 with the Purple Andy Band, whoever the hell they are. Now, I'd like to share what I learned from this episode. You'll kind of know the overall message. Well, I feel it's important to remember who your real friends are. Because at the end of the day, when all is said and done, they're the ones that are going to be there for you. And try not to give in to peer pressure. You know, when it comes to drinking and smoking and everything, you don't have to go with the crowd to be popular. If that's what it takes to be popular, then it is so not worth it. And let me tell you this. Whatever you are in middle school, whatever you are in high school, that is not going to amount to a hell of beans come when you got out in the real world. You know, I know those are supposedly going to be the best days of your life, but your best days are still ahead of you guys. So don't get hung up too much on that, on the pretenses of, you know, being popular, going with the right crowd, listening to the right music, wearing the right clothes. You know, all that stuff, you outgrow your clothes, you outgrow your friends down the road and everything like that. Nothing is ever going to stay as you want it to. So, just think about that when you're faced with a decision that could utterly, you know, change just everything. So, yeah, you know, just because it looks cool to do doesn't mean it is. And I'm going to say straight up, I've never been peer pressured into anything. So, I don't know what it's like. I'm happy that I was kind of sheltered away from that stuff. So, let's give a shout out to a new listener from Cleveland, Ohio. And I want to say thank you again to all you listeners out there. Thank you for listening. I want to give a sincere thank you also to all you listeners out there, which I just said. You know, whether you're listening to this podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud or any other listening platforms that you may use to hear this podcast, I love giving you guys the episode recaps of the Wonder Years every week. Joining me as I go into full detail as we reminisce of the days gone by with Kevin and his friends Paul and Winnie and the rest of the Arnold family, as well as giving my occasional running commentary and childhood stories. I love it all, sharing this with you. I just, you know, hope that you get something out of this and just, you know, enjoyment, laughter, you know, whatever. To stay connected to the podcast, you can visit the Facebook page at Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast, Instagram at LBOM Wonder Years podcast, Twitter at Wonder Years pod, and Gmail at, oh my gosh, all of a sudden, LBOM Wonder Years podcast at gmail.com. If you guys want to, you know, give me messages, send me, you know, your memories and stuff on Wonder Years and everything. I would love to share them on the podcast and get your guys' feedback on some of these episodes and just what you feel. If you were in these situations, how would you handle them? How did you handle them if you did face these situations? Also, if you enjoy this podcast, rate, review, and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Tell your friends. Also, check my social media sites, which, you know, I already listed. You can access them using the links on my SoundCloud account. On my Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast page. I also do trivia and listener questions. So if you would like a shout out on the podcast, all you got to do is answer them. Join me next Friday as we see Kevin develop romantic feelings for his English teacher, Miss White. And he even goes so far to impress her by trying out for the part of Robert Kennedy in the school's production of Martin Luther King Jr. as we watch the episode entitled Our Miss White. All right, well, until next time, peace out, Wonderlings. Have a great weekend. I hear the weather, well, at least where I'm from, it's going to be nice. I hope you guys have nice weather, too. Now that we're in June, we're in a new month. Summer is almost here. So get out there, enjoy that weather. All right, see you next Friday.